Hey, Evan.
Yes?
What's your favorite thing about Kansas City?
I'm going to be a kiss-ass here. It's Arthur Bryant's.
That sauce. Mana from heaven.
For real.
Hello, and welcome to the Expected Own Goals Tasty, Tasty Barbecue Sauce Edition. I am your host, Eric Morgan.
I am Evan Davis. You are listening to our chat about the Kansas City Current, where we were joined by the best-dressed person in all of women's soccer, the one and only Tom Bomb of Shea Butter FC, one of my favorite people that we got to meet at the NWSL Championship in Kansas City back in November, and I'm very, very happy he made the time for us.
Tom is a total delight, and this was such a fun conversation. So enjoy.
To join us for our preview of the Kansas City Current, the team who was inarguably the best team on paper last year, but sure didn't finish the season that way. It is a writer for Shea Butter FC, as well as a co-host for the Shades of Blue podcast. We have the best dressed man in women's soccer, Tom Bomb. How you doing, man?
What's going on, fellas? So happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. This is the perfect way to wrap up a not so great work Tuesday. Like, I've been looking forward to this all day.
I would like more people to say that about me. This is a good way to wrap up a work Tuesday, but that's for another day. Tom, it is really no question that by any metric you wish to choose that the Kansas City Current on paper really were the best team in the NWSL in the regular season. And yet they ended up falling short, losing to Orlando in the semifinal. And when it all shakes out, we're basically fourth on points, fourth in results. So where do you see, if any, maybe this really was just a bit of bad luck that ended up preventing them from winning any trophies last year. But if that's not the case, where do you see the disconnect between the results that they earned and the performances that they put in?
Well, first of all, they did win a trophy. They won the NWSL Liga MX Summer Cup trophy, even though the final was played in October. for the Summer Cup, yes.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. I think, honestly, like the results of the season, like there's a handful of results that if they break a different way, you probably get to play Orlando at home in the final versus, like, you get to at least be two or three versus being four. I'll point, first of all, to the loss to Orlando at home. Like, you were up a player, like, for an entire half, and yet the score remained tied, and you gave them a penalty to win the match, because Marta was always scoring that penalty if it was awarded. So there's that match. There's two draws to Racing Louisville and to Chicago Red Stars at home that, like, that's four points that you left on the board. So right there, that's 7 points. That's enough to at least not necessarily put you into, like, into number one, but at least put you into that 2-3 matchup. So you're avoiding Orlando until the final. And just anecdotally, I know how many people bought tickets, like, that live here, that bought tickets to the final, thinking that Current was going to make the final. So I have a feeling that they probably would have announced it as 11,500, people in the stands, but there would have been way more if Casey Current had made the final. So I look at those three results and probably the loss to North Carolina on the road. And that was the first match that Alma Schultz started.
It's actually great that you're citing specific games here, because they were a point away from finishing second or third in the season. That's how fine the margins were. We were talking a little bit off air about the ways that the team evolved and also what the expectations were coming into the first season at California Pizza Kitchen Stadium back in March. I don't know if you'd ever heard that one before, but that's a specialty over at XOG.
I have not, but I do like that. I do like that.
It's all we've been calling it.
Yeah.
I do like that.
But what, take us through, if you can, the arc of 2024 from a tactical and technical perspective. What people in Kansas City thought the current were going to be in March on the backs of signing somebody like Temwa Chiwenga, who, despite 63 goals across all competitions in 2023, we didn't know how she was going to perform at this kind of level. And then from there, all the interesting ups and downs that their season took, from like ungodly dominance to are they ever going to not concede a goal again, to finally finding an offensive core that shored everything up heading into the playoffs, like you mentioned. Take us through that arc from last offseason to November.
One of the things that was really kind of slept on in talking about the offseason signings was, not only did Casey Current sign Temwa Chiwenga, who became the Golden Boot winner and the league MVP, and they signed Bia Zanerato, who is of the Brazil women's national team, has played plenty with Dabinha, but also the chemistry that she had with Temwa Chiwenga from them playing together in China. Because I think a shout out to PJ Green, because I believe that he was the one that looked it up, that like, I think it was like, of the 63 goals that Temwa Chiwenga scored in 2023, like 40 of them or something were assisted by Bia. So like,
just well, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. Just having that chemistry between the two of them. Like, I think that that was kind of like, we didn't really know. And especially like that first match, you see Dabinha like leave the pitch, like with a knock, and you're just like, oh my gosh, like, what are we going to do? And then I think what ended up happening is that you see the chemistry that Chiwenga and Bia had. And then you bring in a player like Vanessa DiBernardo, who had been playing in Chicago more as a deep-lying playmaker, or you know, more of a box-to-box eight, and then you are able to actually push her up into her natural position as a 10 with Dabinha out. And then it's just like, okay, we're all gas, no brakes at this point, which you needed, because one of the underlying injury plot points of the first half of the season was all of the injuries to the center back. Like, Gabrielle Robinson got hurt, Elizabeth Ball got hurt, and those were two of the defenders that you would have thought would have gotten most of the playing time. And so you saw Current leaking goals, so you had to win the Angel City match 4-2, because you had to score four goals, or else, you know, like, they were gonna score more. So, and like, they got blessed by the fact that like VAR overturned that one goal for Angel City, or else it would have been, I think it would have been 3-2 Angel City, and that results are far different. Like, they had enough of a gap on North Carolina Courage that it wasn't going to affect like where the first round match was played. But yeah, I mean, that made a difference. And then I think once the Orlando game happened right before the international break, you kind of saw Vladko like really kind of take his time as far as like using the Summer Cup and the Women's Cup to bring in players like Alana Cook, like Kayla Sharples, like Alma Schultz, to really solidify that back line. And then you go on that stretch of not allowing a goal for as long as Alma Schultz did, you're feeling much, much better about the defense. So like, the defense, which had been the weakness in the first half of the season, became the strength in the last half of the season. And I think that that's what made the semifinal defeat so crushing, is that I think that you saw Kayla Sharples probably play the worst match that she played in a Casey Current kit that particular match.
Barbara Banda will do that to people.
Yeah.
But but I feel like so much of what was impressive about the Current season last year was that they could beat you so many different ways. Cool. And regularly were very good at jumping a team from the start and then playing like traditional rest defense and just letting individual talent dictate that. going into this season, do you feel like there's an ability for Casey to run some of that back, or do you see other challenges?
I do see a possibility of that. I think that, like, you didn't, like, you're really seeing a lot of the same players. Like, I would say probably the biggest name that you brought in is a Rocky Rodriguez. And I think that is that's going to be super helpful for the midfield, in that, like, Lola Bonta is probably the heartbeat of this team. And I'm not sure that she's going to be able to play 28 matches on top of the, you know, the various other matches that the team will play to make sure that they, like, they can make a deep playoff run with her healthy. Because I think, to me, even though the score was level at halftime, once I saw that Lola Bonta was off the pitch in the semifinal, I was like, oh, they're going to lose. Like, they don't have enough bite in the midfield with Bailey Feist. And, like, if Lowe can't go 75 minutes to 90 minutes, then having a player like Rocky Rodriguez to back her up, or even, like, to fill in for Claire Hutton and the few places where they're, you know, we're going to have the international break or have international breaks where the league is still playing, that's probably the perfect substitution for both of them. Like, somebody who can both play the six and the eight and knows how to link play, just, you know, break up play, and then just get the ball forward. I think that that's probably the biggest thing that we'll see this season. As far as, like, challenges, I just think that because the NWSL season is so long and grueling, you can't really talk about it without talking about injuries. And, like, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when and who. And that's really, really going to matter. And I can't, you know, I don't know, you know, who that player will be that, you know, misses significant time. Like, Dabinia missed a significant portion of the first half of the season. Bia Zanarato missed a significant portion of the back half of the season. So, you know, are we going to be able to see them be able to perform together? I think that that might determine a lot of how far Casey Curran goes.
It being a matter of when, not if, and who is an interesting question, and it's a nice lead-in for me anyway to talking about Temwe Chiwenga, who obviously she had very wide error bars coming into the season, and she smashed those error bars to bits. She put in arguably one of the two or three greatest seasons the NWSL has ever seen. A highly deserved Golden Boot and MVP winner, obviously set the single season goal record. She played so much for a forward, especially one who is being tasked to defend and create her own shot as much as she did. What sense do you get that she is just this sort of athletic marvel that is not necessarily being pushed into the red zone? And to what extent might she be on that when not if list for injuries?
She's got to be high up there on the list, just with the amount of, not only the amount of miles that she has logged, but the amount of fouls that she takes and the amount of fouls that she commits.
For those listeners, he put commits in air quotes, because I think the implication is she is so good with the ball at her feet that, you know, she might just end up creating something that looks like a foul that actually isn't, because she's just faster than everybody else. Am I right in assuming that's what you get?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, I think that, I mean, and this can go to a larger conversation about how darker players are refereed in various leagues across the world. And that, you know, that's definitely part of it. I am concerned about, like, and there's been, like, and I think that as the season kind of progressed, you also saw calls that she didn't get that you were like, that's a foul. Like, I remember several times during the North Carolina playoff match, I was like, how is this not a foul? Like, how was that not called a foul? So I think that you're seeing a lot of that. I think that if it might not matter as much if Bia is still able to stay healthy And that is a big, that's a big if, because any sort of stress fracture is, you know, like that scares the life out of you. Like, obviously it has scared Brazil enough to be like, I don't know if we're going to take you on this international break. So like, it, I think that if Bia can stay healthy and play as consistently as Chiwenga did last season, even if there is a drop off, I think Casey Current will be okay in the goal scoring department. It's just one of those, like, you won't have, I think that there was only one match that I know of that I can like just recall that I didn't immediately think that Timo Chiwenga was the best and most athletic player on the pitch. I think that was actually that Chicago match where like Mal Pugh just played the like a masterclass in that particular match. But that was really the only one. And like that includes the one with Marta, that includes like with Barbara Banda. I mean, with Sarah Gordon, like just I don't know of like there was like I can't think of any other match where she was not both the most athletic and the most technically gifted player on the pitch.
Yeah, she was a complete revelation. To your point about sort of darker players not getting calls, I felt she was the victim of what Lamar Jackson has suffered in the NFL. I think he went 2 years without a roughing the passer call, which is absurd. And Temwa would often, I feel like, beat a defender and then, because there had been a high leg, maybe get another stride in and fall, or beat a defender and it seemed like a push off, when in fact the league just had no ability to compensate for her intelligence as a runner, her deception, or her ability to essentially break an ankle without breaking an ankle.
Yeah.
Do you feel like she is unique in the league in that way? This is sort of a broader question, but I'm curious. Or do you feel like there are other players who are also sort of falling into this, who are subject to this?
After watching the final back, like, because I don't think that I really realized it in the moment, but after watching it back, I really do feel like Barbara Banda does suffer that a lot. Mm-hmm. In this league, and it's unfortunate because both players have obviously explosive pace, and they know when to time their runs, and they are so strong on the ball that it's difficult to knock them off. I think that would probably be my one shining example of like, yeah, we kind of see that with this player. I don't think we necessarily see it as much with like a Sophia Smith or even with a Alyssa Thompson, but I think that part of that is that their games are just so much different than Barbara Banda and Timo Chiwenga.
Yeah. Do you feel like, all that said, Chiwenga can run back and put together a season that basically replicates this? Or do you feel like defenses are going to be wiser to sort of her game this season?
I think that any team that does not look at what Chicago Red Stars, or excuse me, Chicago Stars, is playing.
FC.
FC, that's right. FC. the ball represents soccer.
We don't have time, Tom. I'm sorry. We just don't have time.
Anyone that saw that match and saw what Lauren Donaldson's game plan is, like, they should be copying it. And I think that the challenge for Vladko for 2025 is to see how teams are approaching, like, basically just one for one marking her with your right-sided midfielder shading that way as well. And then how will Vladko adjust off of that? Like, how does that leave a player like Bia Zanarato open? How does that leave a player like Claire Hutton, like Lola Bonta, like Michelle Cooper, like Dabinia? How does that leave that open? And like, are you then like tasking them with making more of the, building up more of the offense and the attack versus like having the wide forward play that you did with Timo Chiwenga and just using her pace?
Yeah, I think your Bia point is spot on, because she is the one who is the other revelation of this squad, given her otherworldly passing ability, particularly in the final third and around the box. 31 years old this season, have you, and you mentioned the stress fracture, coming back to the team after injury layoffs, only to go back on the bench. She really struggled to stay healthy. Can you talk about how central she was and could yet be again to exactly this point? Like, what is it about her game that unlocks so much else for the Coopers and the Chiwingas and the Dabinyas of this team?
Because she's played so much football, and specifically she's played so much with Chiwinga and Bia, she knows what they like to do, and she knows what runs they will like to make based off of their body position, based off of their defender's body position, and just being able to put that pass where they want it, so then they can either make a cross, take a shot, give the ball back to Bia, who makes a ghost run. Her ability to hold up the ball, which Nichelle Prince did a valiant effort when she was called upon to do that. Just all of those factors in conjunction with each other, it made it such that you're almost playing with a false nine with the ability of an actual nine, which is almost unheard of.
To move to another part of the field, we discussed the evolution last year at the goalkeeper position. All of that is out the window. Mm-hmm. What is going on with the KC current goalkeeper situation? And what is your read on it?
So the day that all of the goalkeepers left was the day that they signed Laurel Ivory, who I've liked for Seattle Reign in the spot duty that she's had. Then you bring in another Brazilian in Lorena. I think it's been established, if you have a handful of Brazilians on your team in NWSL, you're probably going to do okay. You look at Orlando, you look at Racing Louisville, and a lot of it is that, because Marta told them, this is the best league in the world. You all need to be playing here. And so I think that they all listened to Marta and heard about that. My immediate read is that you don't spend the money that you did for Lorena without giving her the nod. But that stated, I think that Laurel Ivory has shown herself as a capable NWSL starter. I'm not going to say that she's necessarily a quote unquote replacement level NWSL starter. And I think that Ivory's more of a shot stopper. She's not necessarily the distributor that you would want in the modern game. And I think that Vladko is probably banking on Lorena being more of a distributor type goalkeeper to, maybe get some goalkeeper assists, which are very rare in this league, but you wouldn't think that they would be.
Talking about fullbacks, Haley Mace obviously has been with this team a long time, and we know her pedigree. Ellie Wheeler, a rookie who I don't think anyone should get drafted. She got drafted in the third round, I think, maybe even the fourth, a very deep draft pick. And those picks aren't necessarily expected to contribute starting level minutes. And then we have the case of Izzy Rodriguez, XOG fave, given that, you look under the hood and she might be the best or second best passing fullback in the league. You have three very capable fullbacks who can play for a title contender here. And the minutes were distributed quite evenly across the season in 2024. What do you expect from how Andonovsky wants to use his fullback depth in this new season? Who has stood out as being worthy of being in the 11 come mid-March?
I think towards the end of the season, you could really tell that Haley Mace had made herself the best 1v1 defending outside back for the squad. I did not necessarily vote for all 11. I didn't get the chance to vote for all 11. If I were to vote for all 11, she probably would have been on my second all 11. I thought that she was that good, particularly down the back half of the season. I have a feeling that her name is probably going to be put on the team sheet, probably in pen. And what's nice about all of these fullbacks is that they do. Haley Mace does definitely have some ability to play both sides. So if you do come up against a very, you know, good right winger, you can play her on the left. If you do come up against a good right winger, you can play her on, or left winger, you can play her on the right. So I think that that's probably the most important. And I think that, like, with Izzy Rodriguez and Ellie Wheeler, I think it will depend, like, who gets those minutes will depend on the opponent. And I think, and I'm hoping that that's what Vladko is kind of saying. Like, if Curran has a match where they need dynamic athleticism, then they're going to start Wheeler. If they have a match where, like, hey, we really need some, like, great set piece taking, we really need some really good crosses into the box, like with deft touch, we're going to be starting Izzy Rodriguez. And I think that I'm hoping that letting both of those players kind of know, like, it's going to be match dependent on what, you know, what the matchup is, how we want to attack, who gets the start. I think that both players seem like self-aware enough to know, like, yeah, that makes the most sense for us here, and then we'll go from there. So hopefully that will kind of keep both of those players happy. But I think that Mace is just going to start most of the matches that we see.
Did you get the sense last year that that was the message to Wheeler and Rodriguez, and then that message was received?
Initially, no, because my thought was like, wow, like, Rodriguez didn't play a lot during the back half of the season. Like,
yeah, right.
Like, it's just Ellie Wheeler. And like, is this, hey, we want to get this rookie some, like, the bulk of the minutes so that when the playoffs come, like, we know what we're doing. You see that Curran just signed her to a contract extension, which is kind of almost unheard of for a rookie. After those three, the fullback depth isn't great. So I think that you probably wanted to keep all three of them, but it's kind of like massaging the minutes and making sure that the player feels comfortable enough to be like, yeah, I'll take this quote unquote demotion when I had been the starter, and we'll go from there.
Rodriguez was going to be in her contract year last season, but in the 23-24 off season is when she ended up signing that deal. So she is going to be a free agent this coming off season, which will make things interesting. You referenced center back depth with Ball and Robinson losing majorities of their seasons last year to injury. Gabby Robinson, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, is still rehabbing her ACL right now. Yeah. Cook and Sharples did what they did in the final 9-10 games of the season and really solidified their defensive setup. Now with Ball re-signed, which was a bit of a surprise to me, and with Robinson potentially coming back at some point, and you have four starter caliber center backs to work with, where do you see Andonovsky handling central defense and where he wants to apply minutes to a position where you'd like to see continuity from wire to wire if you can help it?
I think it kind of gives him some flexibility to maybe depending on opponent, maybe play a three at the back and, you know, put Sharples in the middle and Alana Cook out on the left, put Gabrielle Robinson on the right when she's healthy, or flip Cook and put Ball on the left. I know that Elizabeth Ball does not particularly like playing in a three center back lineup. That stated, if you're able to do that, then you can use both Mace and or Wheeler and Rodriguez as more aggressive. I think that that's what was most important or most impressive about Haley Mace's season, is like, not only was she probably the team's best 1v1 defender, she was still also able to jump up into the attack and help combine there while still not necessarily losing any of her defensive responsibilities. So I think that just having those number of players just kind of increases your options. I will be interested to see how well Gabrielle Robinson's recovery is going, to see when she comes back. But I'm not necessarily sure what that's going to look like.
The average age of the sort of core of the attacking is something that I think those of us who watch this game approach with a fair amount of apprehension. You have entering their early and mid-30s, Dabinia, Bia, Vanessa DiBernardo, Lola Labonta, and even the acquisition of Rocky Rodriguez. These are all players on the unfortunate phrase, but the wrong side of 30. Who do you think is best suited to sort of step up and take on a creative role in the attack to spell them if there is a younger player on the roster that you sort of see emerging and eclipsing that 2,000 minute threshold this year?
I would probably say Michelle Cooper. Mm-hmm. I think the team wants that player to be Michelle Cooper. I think that you're kind of seeing the fruits of that labor, even with the results of the U.S. Women's National Team, where she got her first two caps in the She Believes tournament, got her first senior team national goal against Australia. I think that she's probably the player that they are hoping to unlock the most, especially since she's able to not only play winger, but she has she is a traditional attacking midfielder. That's what she was drafted out of Duke as. And I think that being able to play as a winger, but all still like cut in and still play make on the inside, I think that that's probably that is going to be the player that is going to be able to fulfill that role that's not on the opposite side of 30.
What about the player who is on the wrong side of 30? Let's narrow it down to midfield core, DiBernardo, Dabinia, and Labonta. Who's got the legs to put in another season like they had last year?
I'm going to probably say it's going to be Dabinia. As far as like the creative, like creating chances and goal scoring opportunities, that stated, I don't think that of those three that you mentioned, she is the most important. I think that Lola Bonta is probably the most important for the team as a whole.
Lucky for her, she's got some whippersnapper sitting to her immediate left. Claire Hutton is one of the most unique players I've ever seen, given the position that she plays, the age that she's playing it at, and the level at which she is playing that position. How is she due for a sophomore slump at the age of 19? What about Hutton tells you that she can sustain what she did last year as an 18-year-old, and what might indicate that she's still got maybe some room to grow?
I think what impressed me most about Claire Hutton's season is that, like, she was already she came in knowing that she was working into a professional environment and was a professional at 18. That doesn't happen at it doesn't happen in sports, much less any industry in the world. An 18-year-old just comes prepared to go to work and, you know, right, be working. I think the only way that she has a sophomore slump is if both Rocky Rodriguez and Lola Bonta suffer injuries, because I don't think that she is best suited to play in a double pivot. Like, if you asked her to be a lone six, she would attempt it and she would be serviceable at it. But I don't think it would be, I think that it would leave her a little bit exposed and you wouldn't like necessarily the results of what you see. So I think that that's probably why it's important that both of those players stay fit, or at least one of the two of those players stay fit long enough to play. I think that, I mean, honestly, if I'm being honest, Claire Hutton should probably be having a conversation with Emma Hayes and saying, please don't ever start me with that other midfielder ever again.
Because, like, she who shall not be named.
Yes. Because, she didn't look good in that performance against Australia, but it wasn't like she wasn't doing the right thing. She just wasn't necessarily put in the right position. So I think that those two players are players that are going to put a player like Claire Hutton in the correct position to make the right decisions, whereas she did not get that luxury in her first senior national team cap.
Yeah, one of the hallmarks of last season, I think, for the Kansas City Current is, and maybe more than any other team in the league, Vlatko Andonovsky constantly found ways to deploy his players in the right position for them to succeed. And sort of what I think you saw successfully demonstrated across the course of the season was everyone was kind of in the right place at the right time often. Uh-huh. If you're Vlatko, what is the thing keeping you up at night as you go into this season? What is the nightmare that you are potentially having that wakes you up in the middle of the night?
First of all, like, obviously all the health of all of my players, that's number one. Number two, is my goalkeeper going to be able to marshal my defense the way that Almuth Schult did for the second half of the season? Is she still going to, you know, am I still going to be able to get those stops from a shot that, you know, has a 0.75 XG? Am I still going to be able to make sure that all of my defenders are still on the same page? Am I going to find enough minutes for both Dabinia and Vanessa DiBernardo in that attacking midfield role? Is Claire Hutton ready to play as a lone six? I think the answer to that question is no. But is it possible that we could see Lola Bonta push higher up the pitch? I don't know. Maybe. We've seen it happen before. So I think that those will probably be the questions that I would be terrified if I'm Vlatko.
All right. Moment of truth here. Where are they finishing in the table?
Oh, goodness. So
I agonized about this too, by the way. This is not easy.
Yeah. This is not easy. And also, you're not being held to this.
Okay.
We have told people who listen to this podcast many a time, do not come for our guests about these kinds of predictions. These are in jest for fun, and it is very hard. We both, like the absolute idiots that we are, picked Kansas City to finish like 11th and 12th last year, 12th and 13th.
Because you should have.
Yeah. No, we shouldn't have. But nobody will be... You will not be more wrong about the Kansas City Current in 2025 than we were about the Kansas City Current in 2024. So what do you think?
Like, in looking at the teams that I think that are on the ascent, and then looking at the teams that were finished ahead of Kansas City, that do I feel like there'll be any drop off? I am going to say that Kansas City Current finishes fifth in the league this season. That stated, I think that if things break right, they can see themselves in the semifinals and going from there.
Yeah, I think Eric and I both agree that we apply the error bars of variance to give them maybe anywhere as high as third and anywhere as low as fifth. And for me, I think they are third, but they are very, very close in the table to second place Orlando. That's my call. I mean, they are doing a lot of, like, it's very rare that a team just decides to bring on a completely new goalkeeping core. So your point about, like, whether or not Lorena or Laurel Ivory can do the job that Almuth Schult did is a big, big question mark. And then, yeah, the age of that midfield does give me, around Claire Hutton, does give me pause. Like, can they make sure that all of those players stay healthy, that they're playing in the right positions, and then they can go for an entire season the way that they did last year? So I think they are just on the outside of that top two and they end up in third.
You know, maybe Washington made it to the final a year early, but Orlando was excellent sort of throughout the season, and I don't think either Washington or Orlando have backslid at all. That said, am I concerned about the age of Kansas City's, like, attacking core in 2026 or 2027? Yeah, I really am. For 2025, I feel like they have enough really good weapons. I'm also going to say I think they finish probably third, but frankly, if they won the Shield, it wouldn't be that shocking to me either.
Yeah, I agree with that.
They were on paper and in the underlying numbers the best team in the league last year, and they ran into the buzzsaw of knockout football, which just happens. I think it would be pretty shocking for them to finish below sixth in the table. Like, there's a real drop off in quality that I think you see outside maybe a top four or five. And I think the Current are well suited to finish in a home playoff spot. So I for me, they're third.
And I'll say I feel like it's more likely they win the Shield than finishing in sixth, if we're talking about
ranges. Yeah, I think that's variance, I agree. You
know? So
yeah, I would be less surprised.
Does that feel right to you too, Tom?
Maybe. I'm just so intrigued by what North Carolina's project is looking like, especially like bringing in Jaden Shaw. Like, does her and Ashley Sanchez look like together? Gotham seems like they're in a bit of a mess right now, so I think that that is a team on the decline. I'm not sure that I show them like that close to the top of the table, because I think that I still think that Washington and Orlando are still the teams to.
Sure. No, I mean, I fully take that on.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think we're all talking about a very good team that probably has a lot of pressure to win a title this year.
Yes.
My dad's whole family's from Kansas City. And only in recent years has the idea that Kansas City wins titles become a thing.
Correct.
And the Current are now a part of that sports landscape where, like, the expectation is excellence kind of year in, year out. And it feels like they, maybe more than any other team in the league, maybe Gotham, maybe Washington, have the burden of, like, kind of really putting it together and winning a title on the back of last season.
And some teams rise to that and some teams don't. And I think this will be a very interesting crucible through which the Current tests their mettle. You can follow Tom on all social media at TomBomb816.
That is correct.
Tom, yeah. Tom with an H. And you can read his work and a lot of his other content over at Shade Butter FC and listen to him on the Shades of Blue podcast. Tom, you're an absolute delight. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, gentlemen, so much for having me. It's been a great pleasure. Thank you so much.
Once again, you can hear Tom on the Shades of Blue podcast networks and read all of his work over at SheaButterFC.com.
I love the pessimism of a hometown locked-in person, because Tom picking Kansas City to finish fifth, which shouldn't feel pessimistic, does, but like that was so true of so many of the guests we had. Reporting on their own hometown teams. Not a single person wanted to just like, except for Leslie Ryder, who has classic Chicago gusto.
Swinging for the fences.
Everybody else was like so tempered.
I should have said this on the pod. You know what we call Leslie? We call that I don't put ketchup on my hot dog kinds of energy.
That is correct. That is some celery salt power right there. That is the Windy City blowing in the right direction. But everybody else is like, I don't know, my team.
Yeah.
And Tom was no different in that regard and really enjoyed that. I think Tom's going to be pleasantly surprised by this current season.
And we should say that both projection models, the Lerner Elo model and the ASA model, have Kansas City in first place. Projected to go first place.
Higher than we have.
Yes. Kansas City fans, fear not. You guys are still killing it. In the meantime, we've got a couple of other previews that you can hear in our feed today, namely the other conversations with Kim McCauley on the Portland Thorns, and maybe the one on the Courage will be coming out soon. But we'll see. In the meantime, be sure to rate us, review us, follow us, rate us 5 stars if you're going to rate us at all. Please write a review in your podcatcher of choice. Tell all your friends about us. Follow us on social media at XOwnGoals. That's the letter XOwnGoals. And drop us an email at expectedowngoals@gmail.com. That's the letter expectedowngoals@gmail.com. And follow and join our Patreon if you haven't already. $6 a month or $60 a year gets you 4 bonus episodes every single month, as well as access to our Discord server and our semi-regular YouTube live streams. We will be back next week for the regular season.
That's wild.
Crazy.
We'll be back tomorrow with more previews, but next week for the regular season. If you're looking for a reason to join the Patreon, there are a couple really good ones, one of which is these game threads. People just like chat it up during those game threads. And frankly, I love them. I am sure that we will be doing a live stream soon.
Yes.
I don't know which game we're going to pick.
Opening
weekend.
Not so good.
Slate was... What I said to somebody the other day was the opening weekend slate, in a league with 8 playoff teams, somehow only 14
teams in the total league. Somehow the league managed to schedule essentially no potential matchups between playoff teams.
Yeah.
As we see it for opening weekend. So surprising.
You will hear us on YouTube soon enough. But until then, enjoy the rest of the previews, and we will see you for the regular season next week.
Bye.